her pale blue robe closed. Although it was already afternoon, she had still been asleep when the smoke detectors had sounded. She had gone to bed late and had slept in on purpose, telling herself she deserved it after a rather difficult day. The night before, she had watched from an upstairs window as a car had finally pulled up in front of the house. The driveway was long and circular, a deep horseshoe arc bending from the curb to the front door and back, so the street was a good 100 feet away, too far for her to see clearly. And even in May, at 8 o'clock, it was almost dark besides. But she had recognized a small tan Volkswagen of her tenant, Mia, in its headlights shining. The passenger door opened and a slender figure emerged, leaving the door ajar. Mia's teenage daughter, Pearl. The dome light lit the inside of the car like a shadow box, but the car was packed with bags nearly to the ceiling, and Mrs. Richardson could only just make out the faint silhouette of Mia's head, the messy topknot perched at the crown of her head. Pearl bent over the mailbox, and Mrs. Richardson imagined the faint squeak as the mailbox door opened, then shut. Then Pearl hopped back into the car and closed the door. The brake lights flared red, then winked out, and the car puttered off into the growing night. With a sense of relief, Mrs. Richardson had gone down to the mailbox and found a set of keys on a plain ring, with no note. She had planned to go over in the morning and check the rental house on Winslow Road, even though she already knew that they would be gone. It was because of this that she had allowed herself to sleep in. And now it was 12:30, and she was standing on the tree lawn in her robe and a pair of her son Tripp's tennis shoes, watching their house burn to the ground. When she had awoken to the shrill scream of the smoke detector, she ran from room to room looking for him, for Lexi, for Moody. It struck her that she had not looked for Izzy, as if she had known already that Izzy was to blame. Every bedroom was empty except for the smell of gasoline and a small crackling fire set directly in the middle of each bed, as if a demented Girl Scout had been camping there. By the time she checked the living room, the family room, the rec room, and the kitchen, the smoke had begun to spread, and she ran outside at last to hear the sirens, alerted by their home security system, already approaching. Out in the driveway, she saw that Tripp's Jeep was gone, as was Lexi's Explorer and Moody's bike, and, of course, her husband's sedan. He usually went into the office to play catch-up on Saturday mornings. Someone would have to call him at work. She remembered then that Lexi, thank God, had stayed over at Serena Wong's house last night. She wondered where Izzy had gotten to. She wondered where her sons were, and how she would find them to tell them what had happened. By the time the fire was put out, the house had not, despite Mrs. Richardson's fears, quite burned to the ground. The windows were all gone, but the brick shell of the house remained, damp and blackened and steaming, and most of the roof, the dark slate shingles gleaming like fish scales from their recent soaking. The Richardsons would not be allowed inside for another few days until the fire department's engineers had tested each of the beams still standing. But even from the tree lawn, the closest the yellow caution tape would allow them to come, they could see there was little inside to be saved. "Jesus Christ," Lexi said. She was perched on the roof of her car, which was now parked across the street on the grass bordering the duck pond. She and Serena had still been asleep, curled up back to back in Serena's queen size, when Dr. Wong shook her shoulder just after one, whispering, "Lexi, Lexi, honey, wake up. Your mom just called." They had stayed up past 2 a.m. talking, as they had been all spring, about little Mirabel McCullough, arguing about whether the judge had decided right or wrong, about whether her new parents should have gotten custody or if she should have been given back to her own mother. "Her name isn't even really Mirabel McCullough, for God's sake," Serena had said at last, and they'd lapsed into sullen, troubled silence until they both...